So Eric Allinson, we are back on air here. It seems like it's been, you know, several months at least since we have migrated the formerly titled Tapioca Radio Show over to Experience Magazine.
That is absolutely right, Mike. It's awesome to be back with you, my friend. In fact, I think it's actually been, has it been 2 years since we've been on the air together?
I think so.
I think it's been 2 years since we were in the Bearcast Media studio, bantering back and forth and fumbling through interviews with folks like Kevin Geiger and Willie Clark and Kettle Cedar Kreutz. Some of the other great folks that we have at UC.
Yeah. Well, you kept having babies, and so that was throwing our production schedule off. Hey. But I think that you're done with that for a while, maybe.
We are done. Yes, for the indefinite future, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, congrats on the new kiddos, the growing family, the growing Allinson clan. I just hope that your kids get all their looks and their intelligence from their mother, because if not, we're in for a...
I think they will, Mike. I wouldn't wish that upon them at all. I think that would be difficult.
Yeah.
So Mike, I have to introduce this, right? Yeah, because this is no longer the podcast of the Tapioca Radio Show. Right. This is the Experience Magazine podcast. Mm-hmm. The newly rebranded. We went through a very expensive marketing firm to come up with this.
Right.
And new imagery. We have producers now, Mike.
Yeah, big time.
Producers. We have folks that run the show for us.
Yeah.
So I don't have to go through volume controls and forget to hit record or something.
Right.
So it's outstanding. I can talk, and a little bit of the pressure's off.
Yeah, man.
But in doing so, Mike, if you will, I have to do the show read to introduce this to our newest group of listeners. All right.
Yeah. Do it, man.
The Experience Magazine podcast provides space for content creators and content consumers in the world of experiential and work-integrated learning. You will be able to listen to interviews with scholars, practitioners, students, employer partners, and with other thought leaders in the field. It is an exciting time to be involved in the world of experiential and work-integrated learning. Through the Experience Magazine podcast, we will share best practices, discuss lessons learned from some of the greatest educators in the world.
Beautiful, man. It's almost like you wrote that.
It's almost like I did. It just kind of came to me.
Right.
And through a stream of consciousness, I had to relay that.
So that was
beautiful. That our listenership knew what they were getting themselves into.
Yeah. And Eric, it is exciting. You know, we started that tapioca idea as a hobby, I think, and didn't really expect it to take off. And it did modestly. And then because of CEIA and their growth and leadership in the field, we were able to work with that organization and really take it to a completely different level. And
absolutely.
So we have our really first guest on the new platform. And it's a pleasure to introduce to someone that I consider not just a colleague, but a friend and an advisor, and it's Peggy Harrier. So Peggy, at Cincinnati State Technical and Community College, Peggy Harrier is a former dean of business, where she supervised a mandatory co-op component for 20 majors. In addition, she had management responsibilities for 50 full-time faculty and 200 adjunct instructors. Peggy was also a chair of the Business Technologies Division, where she had management responsibilities for the management, marketing, and real estate programs, and coordinated a mandatory co-op component for students. Cincinnati State maintained the largest co-op program among two-year schools in the U.S. and remained in the top 10 of all co-op programs in the country for 25 years. Having worked as a co-op coordinator early in her career at the college, she was tenured faculty member teaching business law, ethics, co-op seminar, and professional practices. Also, as a licensed real estate broker, Peggy had experience in both industry and education. She earned a BA degree from St. Mary's College, Notre Dame, Indiana, as well as a Master's of Education degree from Xavier University. She retired from Cincinnati State in 2013 and was associated with the college for over 30 years. Peggy joined the CEIA board in 2000, where she has served as the association as a board member for the past 20 years. Accomplishments to note for Peggy include preparing and distributing national state of the profession surveys, leading the reorganization efforts for the Journal of Cooperative Education and internships, serving as president in 2004 and 2005 and chairing two conferences, including co-chairing the 2006 Centennial Celebration. She was instrumental in securing a collaborative agreement for the production of the Journal of Cooperative Education and Internships with WACE, NCCE, and CAFCE. She also initiated strategic partnerships with WACE and NCCE for projects being conducted in the field and has assisted CEIA with the development of an interactive website. Peggy is a CEIA Academy trainer specializing in quality improvement processes. CIA honored Peggy with the Dean Herman Schneider Award in 2009. Currently, Peggy Harrier is the executive director of the Cooperative Education and Internship Association. And Eric, it is exciting to have her on. And if you or I combined could reach the level of accomplishments that our first guest here has done, we can be very, very proud of ourselves.
We would be doing pretty well if we met maybe 50% of that.
Correct.
So
I'm exhausted just listening to it.
me too. Oh my gosh. Peggy, it's fantastic to have you. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us virtually in the first installment of this new Experience Magazine podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me. This is exciting.
It is exciting. And Peggy, thank you again for your time. And thank you for all your leadership over the years with getting the magazine launched and relaunched and then the new platform we've been able to publish. It's an exciting time to be involved with this work, and it's very fitting that you are our first official guest. And if it's okay, Peggy, I'd like to go back in time here a little bit and maybe just ask you, how did you originally become involved in this world of experiential education?
Well, it's through the back door a little bit. I was working as a property manager for a 200-unit apartment complex and for a condo subdivision, and the owners were 20 Ford Motor Company executives. And the properties were about to be sold. And so my background had been in real estate and property management, obviously. And I saw an ad in the paper for Cincinnati State. And so went through the interview process, and Dan Case hired me. Yeah, and so I went to work as an instructor and a co-op coordinator for real estate and property management. And then it just took off. I never looked back because I fell in love with what the co-op program was all about. So that's the short version of how it all happened.
Yeah, so you sort of got your start at Cincinnati State, hired by Dan Case, who's still affiliated with CEIA. And so about how many years ago was that, Peggy?
That was in 1984. I'm giving my age away, but yeah.
It 1984.
Was, right. And in the 80s and 90s were a real exciting time. So, you know, Cincinnati State at the time was on five terms a year. And we had a special arrangement with the state of Ohio. And so we were all entrepreneurs, and we were all just, you go and you do and be creative, and you weren't doing your job if you were in the office. So, you know, you couldn't wait to get up in the morning and get to work, and you didn't want to go home at night because there was always so much to happen. And then just about the time you would settle in and get lazy and or get tired of what you're doing, something new and exciting would be happening. And the United States had over 300,000 students a year participating in co-op, the national ad campaign. Schools just couldn't get enough of cooperative education. Employers were knocking at our door. So, you know, there was always something to grab your attention and to challenge you. And that's what kept me there.
Peggy, that's fantastic to see your background, the fact that you've been committed to the field now since 1984. That's absolutely incredible. Can you talk a little bit about how you've seen the evolution of co-op and perhaps work integrated learning or experiential learning even more broadly throughout your time in your roles?
I think when I, in the early, all through the 80s and in the early 90s, it was really traditional co-op programs. The community, you know, a term on, a term off. The two-year schools were the stepchildren for the four-year programs, obviously, but they had more flexibility, so they were doing parallel programs where they were going to school and working at the same time. But that was more the exception to the rule. Employers, it was very structured, you know, with the way the program worked, and there were very strict guidelines of what you call cooperative education. Internships didn't really start to enter the picture until in the 90s. And in late 90s, CEI, it used to be the Cooperative Education Association, they changed their name, as most of our organizations did, to include internships at that point. There was Title VIII money back then. And so, you know, we were flush. I mean, there were training centers all over the United States, training new professionals that were coming into the field. There were opportunities. CEIA was formed in the 60s, but there was opportunity for state and regional organizations to provide professional development. There was a lot of traveling that could go on. The programs, co-op programs, were really tied to academic departments and academic programs. And I saw back then that the academics were really, really the main push. You know, when the national ad campaign came out, and I'm a people person, I like to talk with people. It was hysterical, and it got the attention, you know, of the corporations in the United States. So that's where, for me, I felt like those times it was at its peak. The 90s come, internships start to rise, other types of work integrated learning programs started to come about. And then in the 2000s, when you had the economy went south, a lot of these programs that had been operating on federal grants and Title VIII money, which eventually went away, those programs ceased to exist. And so everybody had to tighten their belt. And as we all know in our field, when the economy's bad, everybody comes back to school and they all want jobs. And then the economy gets great and they go away. But when the economy's bad, the first jobs to go are your co-op jobs. So it's really important to have those relationships, long-term relationships with small and medium-sized companies are really the ones that stay with you in that situation. So we started to see those things happen, and we had to become very creative. And then that's also the time in the early 2000s where you started to see career centers come into play. And, you know, they weren't so much decentralized. Now they were centralizing more of the programs, and career centers were getting involved. The bigger traditional schools held on to their centralized programs. University of Cincinnati, Northeastern at that time, Drexel University. Those models remained in place and pretty much remain in place today, although Northeastern has changed their model a little bit. But the rest of us, we just go with the flow. And so I lived through a lot of those changes, some of them painful, some of them exciting. Those would be the biggest changes that I would have seen.
And Peggy, that's incredible insight you have, just diving into some of the evolution of WIL programs and experiential learning over time. We've almost embarked on this micro transformation, if you will, just due to the impact of COVID-19, which we have yet to acknowledge here on the show today. One of the reasons Mike and I aren't in studio is because of the pandemic and the impact that's had on our colleges and universities across the country. And to piggyback off that previous commentary, Peggy, have you seen any developments or perhaps recent changes just as a result of the pandemic impacting co-op and work integrated learning programs?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, it's a virtual world right now. And, I would say a good 50, 60, 75% of college and university professionals already knew how to work online. Were either teaching online or you know, had the technology backgrounds to do it. But money has gone away. Budgets are blown. They've positions have been frozen. Early retirements are happening. So you got fewer people doing a lot more work and doing it virtually. And I'm talking to people in our field. We have about 700 members in CEIA, and majority of them are from colleges and universities. They're exhausted, you know, because the difference is we're able to adapt in the field. We've always had to, but the challenges come into working with students of such diverse backgrounds and what's their ability to adapt to this kind of environment. And then you've got the employers. And, you know, what happened to all those summer jobs that employers had committed to? A good percentage of them kept them. But, you know, the bigger companies learned how to make these virtual internships and co-op assignments. And some of the bigger companies, Microsoft, for example, would send their computers and all of their software, you know, to the student to use for the summer. And they remotely worked. The thing that you lose with that, though, is how to be a good employee and build those in-person relationships and how to get the answers and problem solve and all of those, what makes for a good overall employee, they lose a lot of that in translation. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that I've seen, is do more with less, tighten the belts, and figure out how to provide services. So just even us as an association, how do we provide services for all these people?
You know, Peggy, speaking of that, word of mouth and talking to different people in the field, it's pretty accepted that CEIA has really become a leader in how do you transition, right, from this traditional face-to-face model of education, particularly when we're talking about experiential learning. And CEIA has done a really good job, really in a quick amount of time, to transition to support the colleges and the universities that are members of CEIA. But for our listeners here that may not be as familiar with the organization, the Cooperative Education and Internship Association, can you tell us a little bit about what is it that you guys do? What's like the vision and the mission for CEIA?
Sure. And thank you for that. We've worked really hard to try to support our folks during this time. You know, we view ourselves as the leaders in work integrated learning. And I think our primary purpose is to provide leadership development for our members. And, you know, peer mentorship, research, professional development, now virtual professional development. Our conference in last March that was scheduled in San Diego was canceled. And 2 weeks later, we put on a virtually in San Diego conference. That was at no charge, and we had over 900 attendees, unduplicated. We had 2,600 people participate in that series of virtual. Then our Vail CEIA Academy training in June was also canceled, so we did a virtually in Vail training, and that was more of a pay and play opportunity. And again, no problem doing that. We're doing webinars now every month. We are doing, hopefully with this podcast, we'll be offering podcasts. We're doing virtual career fairs with Career Eco. We have one coming up for the Northeast and the Southeast regions in October. Our mission is really member driven, primarily for practitioners. Tell us what you need. We're going to start some open forums so that you know, we can be reactive depending on what the needs of our people are. Because really, think about it. CEIA, we work with educators, we work with employers, we work for students, agencies, researchers, you know, high schools, colleges, clinicals. Think about the service learning. Think about the broad base today of experiential learning. And we have tried to encompass all of that. We can't be all things to all people, but I think that we've done a pretty good job. And everybody has just really stepped up to help each other. And I think that's what gets us through.
Peggy, you mentioned some of the key initiatives in terms of the national conference, as well as an academy training program that CEIA provides. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of those key endeavors or key activities that CEIA is involved in on an annual basis?
Well, you mean the kinds of topics or the kinds of events that we do?
Sure.
Okay. You know, our webinars are usually done by members or experts in the field. They're very broad-based. And those are free for members of CEIA at a nominal charge. The conferences we do every year in a different part of the country. We have another conference coming up, actually. It's an in-person conference coming up in April in Tampa, Florida. And our fingers are crossed. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen with that, but we're bound to determine that, you know, we're going to do that. And honestly, a national conference is great for people coming into the field because it's a networking opportunity. You know, you can form those relationships that are so important. Your session, you will have 60 to 80 breakout sessions and general speakers and fun things to do as well so that you can get to know people in the field. It's what kept me in the field all these years, because I went to my first conference in 1985 in Louisville, Kentucky, and oh my gosh, they were all dressed up in antebellum and, you know, I mean, in gowns and tuxes and all these things. And so we tried to provide professional development in the terms of how you market a program, how do you start a program, how do you, you know, how do you find employers, what's the process for placing a student, all of those kinds of things. What are the ethics of working in this field? You know, all of those kinds of things that our members are our presenters and that they bring to the table. The training that we do through the CEIA Academy, that's our professional development arm. We have done the Academy in Vail, Colorado for many years. It's actually started in the 80s and then came back, and I've been doing it since 2000, where that's for new people in the field. So 1 to 3 years of experience. You come to Vail for 2 or 3 days. It's a very motivational, inspirational setting, on the backside of Vail, Colorado. You're in the mountains. You're a cohort of 30 people at the most. And it's everything from, you know, how do I get funding for my program, to market my program, to get senior management, you know, to fund me, to everything else in between. It's so that is predominantly for new people. And then we set them up with a year-long mentoring program. So anybody that attends that training, they're connected to an experienced member that they can then consult with all year. And that has proven to be really good, the best way of bringing newbies into the field. We're also now going to do employer training. That's a new initiative that is coming through the Academy. And then we're looking at, through the podcast that we're doing with you, trying to do some more extended types of training.
That is fantastic, Peggy. And I for one, am... looking forward to Tampa. You know, I think everybody's going a little stir crazy, not being able to get out of the house much. And so our fingers are crossed with you that COVID is a distant memory, or maybe a not so distant memory at that time. In addition to the conference in Tampa and the Academy, are there other sort of exciting things coming up that we want our listeners to be aware of and participate in?
Yes, as a matter of fact, thank you for allowing me to put some things out there for us. October is National CEIA Month, Cooperative Education and Internship Month. So there will be a series of activities that will be going on. We have a virtual career fair that we are offering, and we'll be doing three of those for different regions of the country throughout the year. I think the next one will be in January for the Midwest and the Southwest, and then we'll do another one in March leading into the conference. So that's one thing we're doing. There will be a give campaign going on during the month of October to support some of the initiatives. We have a new diversity and inclusion fellowship that we have developed, for example. So that's something that we're putting together. The Midwest Cooperative Education Association has dissolved and decided to grant their funds to CEIA. And so as a result of that, the funds will be used for, number one, professional development activities, but number two, for people in the Midwest region, because this was a Midwest organization, we now will have 3 scholarships a year through the Academy for Midwest People for Leadership Development. And that's a 10-year commitment that CEIA made. And so we're very excited to announce that. Some of the other things that we're doing, new member forums, I mentioned it earlier. We're going to have those take place beginning in October, where we will have different chat rooms and different forums going on simultaneously, mostly through Zoom is my guess. Podcasting actually might be a way to do a little of this too. I'll be hitting you guys up. You just don't know about it yet. So we got that going on as well. So, and we have 4 webinars scheduled, and the website is very interactive. We have over 50 years of research from the Journal of Cooperative Education and Internships, and there is a portal in partnership that is on our website, and we're in partnership with the University of Waterloo. And so we have research worldwide now. And research is becoming important again, as we have to justify what we're doing to keep our jobs and keep our programs moving. And so I know that you guys are in that, you know, you're really working with me on this research end. And you know, Michael, I'm so proud of you guys and the University of Cincinnati for helping us really get this Experience Magazine going up again. And so that's another initiative that we're putting a lot of energy behind.
That's fantastic, Peggy. I'm looking at your website now, and it's a beautiful website. And I'm looking at the link under events, and many of the things that you sort of mentioned there are listed. So for our listeners, it's really easy to find information about CEIA. Just go to CEIA.org, and you can click through and explore all the wonderful things that CEIA has to offer now and coming up in the future. Peggy, thank you so much for your time today. It's a pleasure to talk with you again. And all of this is only possible because of your support throughout the last several years of getting the magazine relaunched. And now this new exciting way that we're adding to that platform by doing podcasts. And so I just want to thank you again for your time here. And I think Eric Allenson has a few other words to say, and we'll go ahead and wrap it up.
Peggy, just wanted to, again, echo the sentiments of Mike. Really appreciate you being on the show with us and starting strong. You've set a very high bar for our next subsequent guests. So we'll make sure that we get this up and live and available to our listeners as soon as possible. So hopefully it'll be a good addition to CEIA.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is really fun to do. And honestly, it's my first podcast. So right. I wish you guys good luck as well.
We appreciate it. For my co-host, Michael Sharp, our producer, Hunter Burris, I'm Eric Allenson. This has been an airing of the Experience Magazine podcast brought to you by CEIA.